Welcome to today's deep dive. I want you to imagine an artificial intelligence, right? And it's tasked with learning how to read this ancient, incredibly complex language.
Right, like deciphering hieroglyphs or
Yeah,
something.
exactly. But nobody hands this AI a dictionary. Nobody explains the grammar or, even tells it what the symbols mean.
It's just going in totally blind.
Totally blind. All it gets is just this massive pile of text, and it basically just stares at those characters until the hidden rules of the language just sort of reveal themselves.
Which, I mean, it sounds like pure science fiction.
It really does. But today we're looking at a machine that did exactly that, but with the code of human life. So we are diving into a June 2026 report by Klaus Holmgren. It's called Predicting Human Non-Tata Promoters from DNA Sequence with a Convolutional Neural Network.
It's a bit of a mouthful, but a brilliant paper.
Yeah, quite the title. But our mission today is to explore how this tiny, like lightning-fast AI model learned to accurately predict regulatory functions in human DNA.
Right, and not just predict them, but
Right, exactly. More importantly, how it actually taught itself the fundamental biological rules to pull it off. I'm thrilled about this because we're finally seeing AI that doesn't just, spit out a blind prediction. This model actually shows its work.
It does. It really it pulls back the curtain in a way we haven't seen much before. Because, I mean, to appreciate what this network pulled off in just a matter of seconds, we really need to ground ourselves in the biological reality it was trying to navigate.
Right.
The model was built to find promoters.
Okay, let's unpack this because we all know that genes are the actual coding sequences for making proteins, right? But the cellular machinery, specifically RNA polymerase, it needs to know exactly where to dock onto the DNA strand to start reading.
Right, you can't just start reading a book anywhere. You need to find the first page.
Exactly. So promoters are essentially those biological start buttons. They're these regulatory regions sitting just upstream of the gene.
And, historically, when biologists first started mapping these regions, they found a very obvious start button. It's called the Tata box.
The Tata box, which is literally what it sounds like, right?
Yeah, it's literally a sequence of thymine, adenine, over and over, TATA. And because it's so chemically distinct, it acts like this giant flashing neon sign for the transcription machinery to bind to.
Like a massive landing pad.
Right. But as we mapped more of the human genome, we realized that a massive fraction of our genes, like some of the most important everyday housekeeping genes that keep our cells alive, they actually don't have that convenient Tata beacon.
Oh, wow. So they're just.
Yeah, they are what we call Tata-less promoters.
Okay, so without that flashing neon sign, finding the start button gets incredibly difficult, right? Because the RNA polymerase still has to dock somewhere. So it must be relying on a completely different set of signals.
Exactly. It relies on regions that are heavily saturated with guanine and cytosine bases.
The G's and C's.
Right. Biologists call them GC-rich elements or CpG islands. The problem is identifying these Tata-less promoters directly from a raw DNA sequence is just an absolute nightmare for computational biologists.
Because it's not a clear beacon anymore.
No, not at all. The signals are encoded in these very short, fuzzy, position-flexible motifs. I mean, you are searching for a microscopic pattern hidden within millions of base pairs. And to make it worse, the distance between that pattern and the actual start of the gene, it fluctuates wildly.
Which sets the stage perfectly for an AI pattern recognition challenge, right?
Exactly.
So the Holmgren report decided to tackle this using a data set from genomic benchmarks. They pulled tens of thousands of DNA sequences, and each one was exactly 251 base pairs long, focusing specifically on human non-Tata promoters.
Right, a very clean data set.
But you can't just feed raw biological material into a graphics card.
Yeah.
So how did they translate that string of biological letters into something a neural network could actually digest?
Well, they used a technique called one-hot encoding because, to make a machine understand the four-letter alphabet of DNA, the A, C, G, and T, you have to convert those letters into purely mathematical states.
Numbers.
Right, numbers. So for a sequence of 251 bases, you generate this grid.
Okay, let me visualize that for a second. If you're listening, picture a spreadsheet. You have 251 columns, right? One for every position in that DNA sequence. Then you have four rows representing A, C, G, and T. So if the very first letter of the DNA sequence is an A, you just put a one in the A row for that column, and E is in the other three rows.
Exactly.
And if the next letter is a C, the one goes in the C row. and you just keep doing that. So you end up with this 4x251 mathematical matrix filled entirely with ones and zeros.
Yeah, and that matrix provides an incredibly clean, unambiguous input for the model. And the data set they used was pretty substantial, too. They had 27,097 of these encoded sequences used to train the AI.
Wow, okay.
And then another 9,034 were locked away in a vault, basically, to test the AI later.
To make sure it wasn't just memorizing the answers.
Exactly. And it was also naturally balanced. Yeah. So about 54% of those sequences actually contained a true promoter, and the rest were just random background DNA.
Okay, so they feed this clean matrix into an architecture that Holmgren calls promoter CNN. It's a convolutional neural network. But wait, I thought convolutional neural networks were mostly used for recognizing images like faces or cats in photos.
Yeah.
So how does a visual tool built to analyze a two-dimensional grid of pixels scan a flat, linear sequence of A, C, G, and T's?
Well, so in traditional image recognition, a CNN uses a 2D convolution. It takes this tiny square window filter, and it slides it left and right, up and down, across the entire height and width of a picture.
Right, looking for edges and shapes.
Right, but DNA isn't a photograph. It's a linear string. So the model relies on a 1D convolution. It only moves in one dimension, straight down the length of the sequence. What's fascinating here is that, mathematically speaking, scanning this sequence with a 1D convolution is exactly like a biologist scanning with a position weight matrix.
A position weight matrix. I've heard that term. That's the standard tool biologists use to represent the preferred binding pattern of a transcription factor, right? Like, it scores how well a piece of DNA matches the protein's physical shape.
Exactly that. The network's filter is performing the exact same mathematical dot product operation that researchers have spent, like, decades doing manually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. As the convolution window slides across those 251 base pairs, it calculates a score at every single step, basically checking to see if a specific structural pattern is present in that tiny local neighborhood of DNA.
Okay. That brings us to the actual build of promoter CNN, which is just brilliantly efficient because this model is remarkably tiny.
Very tiny.
It only has about 108,000 parameters.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you consider that the large language models we interact with today have like hundreds of billions of parameters.
Oh, yeah. They're massive.
Yeah. So 108,000 is practically microscopic.
It is incredibly lean. And it follows this classic, highly respected design philosophy in genomics that we know from the DeepBind and Bassett architectures. The very first layer of this network really does all the heavy lifting. It consists of 128 different filters, and each filter is exactly 19 base pairs wide.
So think of those 128 filters, like 128 different keyholes, cut into a wooden block. The model takes these keyholes, and it just slides them down the DNA strand.
Yeah, nah.
And a filter only activates or, you know, lights up mathematically when a specific sequence of DNA perfectly fits the shape of that keyhole.
Precisely.
But after that layer scans the sequence, the model applies a technique called global max pooling. And this is where I get a little stuck. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm understanding this right, global max pooling takes the highest score from the entire scan, and then it just throws away the exact position where it found it.
That's right. It discards the spatial coordinates entirely.
But wait, DNA is huge. Isn't the exact location of the signal everything? Like, in a sentence, the word start means something completely different at the beginning versus the very end. If a promoter is the start button for a gene, how can it just ignore where it is?
Well, in a mechanical system, you'd be totally right, but biology is incredibly noisy and flexible.
Okay.
The regulatory elements in these totalist promoters, they don't sit at rigid, fixed distances from the gene. The binding site might be 40 base pairs upstream for one gene, and then maybe 120 base pairs upstream for another. It fluctuates.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if you engineer a neural network to rigidly expect the signal at exactly, say, position 42...
It's just going to fail.
It will fail the moment it encounters the messy reality of a living cell.
Okay, so losing the positional data is actually a feature, not a bug.
It is a critical feature. By using global max pooling, the model is essentially asking one simple, very robust question per filter. Does this motif occur anywhere in the sequence? It just captures the maximum activation score. Machine learning engineers call this an inductive bias.
An inductive bias.
Yeah. You are baking an assumption into the very plumbing of the network that perfectly mirrors the physical reality of the biology you are studying. The model is built to be robust to where the signal sits.
You're forcing the AI to view the world through the lens of biological flexibility.
I love that.
Okay. So we have this tiny purpose-built architecture. The real question is, did it actually work?
Oh, it worked.
Yeah, the performance metrics in this report are staggering. Holmgren trained this entire model on a single consumer graphics card, an NVIDIA RTX 4070.
Which is wild.
Like, you could buy that at a local electronics store today, and it took about 0.5 seconds per epoch. The entire training process, start to finish, was over in roughly 10 seconds.
10 seconds to map the regulatory logic of human promoters? I mean, let the weight of that sink in.
It's insane.
It's an incredible testament to how efficient these architectures can be when you pair them with the right inductive biases.
And the headline results on the 9,034 held-out test sequences, the ones it had never seen before, were phenomenal. It hit an accuracy of 90.5%.
Right.
But, you know, accuracy can be a deceptive metric if a data set is unbalanced. The number that really proves the model's power is its AURC, the area under the receiver operating characteristic curve.
Say that 10 times fast.
I know, right? But that score came in at 0.969.
Which, for anyone not knee-deep in statistics, an AURC of 0.969 is bordering on predictive perfection.
Seriously. If you're wondering why you should care about an AURC score, think of the ROC curve as a sliding scale of paranoia.
Paranoia, I like that.
Right. Like, if a model's incredibly strict, it won't guess promoter unless it is 100% certain. And in that case, it makes zero false positive mistakes, but it misses a ton of real promoters.
It's too cautious.
Exactly. But if you slide the scale the other way and make the model overly eager, it catches all the real promoters, but falsely flags a bunch of background DNA too.
And graphing that curve visually shows us the trade-off. In Holmgren's report, that steep ROC curve shoots almost straight vertically before plateauing perfectly across the top.
Indicating strong separation of the classes.
Exactly. It mathematically proves that even when the model is operating with high confidence, it rarely gets fooled. The true positives skyrocket while the false positives barely budge.
And you can see that play out practically in the confusion matrix. Like, at a baseline 0.5 confidence threshold, out of the thousands of actual promoters in the test set, the AI only missed 289 of them.
Just 289 false negatives.
Right. It did have slightly more false positives, incorrectly flagging 572 sequences as promoters when they actually weren't.
Which translates to a higher sensitivity, a 0.941 recall over specificity, which was 0.861. And, you know, from the perspective of a biologist doing a screening task, that specific asymmetry makes total sense. That's exactly what you want.
Really? Why is that?
Because if you are scanning 3 billion base pairs of a human genome looking for unknown regulatory regions, you want to cast a slightly wider net. It is far better to catch a few false positives, which, you know, your lab technicians can quickly verify or discard later, than to deploy a model so rigid that it completely blinds you to real, biologically vital promoters.
Oh, I see. You definitely want your metal detector to beep at a few rusty nails if it guarantees you'll never miss the buried treasure.
Exactly. Perfect analogy.
So the engineering is brilliant. It sorts the data beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
But a machine sorting ones and zeros accurately doesn't mean it actually understands biology.
No, it doesn't.
Right, because neural networks have gained data sets before by finding meaningless artifacts.
Mm.
Can we actually see what this AI learned to prove it's doing real science?
That is the pivotal question of the entire report. High accuracy is completely meaningless if the network is just a black box. We need to know what geometric shapes those 128 keyholes actually formed during that 10-second training window.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because to open that black box, the report leverages this standard interpretability technique. And it's a fascinating process. It's the deep bind or BASID procedure.
Right.
First, you take thousands of real DNA sequences and you run them through the first convolution of the fully trained model. Then you monitor those 128 filters and extract the specific microscopic snippets of DNA that caused each filter to light up the brightest.
You isolate the exact sequence that fits the keyhole.
Exactly. Then you take all those highly activating snippets for a specific filter and you stack them on top of each other. Finally, you generate what's known as information content sequence logos.
Right. And if you haven't seen one, it looks like a stack of letters where the size of the A, C, G, or T shows you mathematically how critical that specific base is at that exact position.
To make the filter activate.
Right. And when Holmgren generated these sequence logos, the visuals were breathtakingly crisp. They weren't just random noise or artifacts. They were highly structured, undeniable biological motifs.
And remember earlier when we talked about Tautolus promoters relying on regions heavily saturated with guanines and cytosine?
DGC-rich elements.
Yes. The most informative, highest-ranking filters in the AI model learned exactly that. They learned crisp, GC-rich patterns. Specifically, it mapped out something called a GC box motif. The sequence logo literally spelled out a near-perfect string of G's and C's. G, 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 C, G, G, G.
It's just incredible, because if we connect this to the bigger picture, that specific sequence, the GC box, is not just some random statistical anomaly. It is the universally recognized canonical binding site for the SP1 and KLF family of transcription factors.
The actual proteins.
Yes, these are the physical proteins that float around the nucleus and attach to Tautolus promoters to kickstart gene expression. I mean, decades of painstaking, grueling human lab work went into discovering and validating that exact sequence.
And this AI model replicated that discovery in 10 seconds.
Yes.
I mean, it's like an AI learning English grammar just by reading millions of books without ever being handed a dictionary. It was given zero biological supervision. Nobody programmed a GC box into its code.
Nobody fed it a textbook on SP1 transcription factors.
All it had was that spreadsheet of ones and zeros and a label that said promoter or non-promoter. And it just stared at that raw data until it independently concluded mathematically that the most vital feature for human gene transcription was that specific string of G's and C's.
It independently rediscovered known regulatory grammar purely from labeled sequences. It just figured out the rules of nature on its own.
It gives you chills.
It really does. It's profound validation. The math arrived at the exact same conclusion as the biology. This is precisely why convolutional neural networks have become the absolute workhorse of modern regulatory genomics. They don't just predict, they reveal.
They really do. But, you know, as awe-inspiring as this is, the scientific method demands skepticism.
Always.
We have to poke holes in it. So what are the limitations outlined in the report? Where are the blind spots?
Well, this raises an important question. How well does this model hold up outside of this specific, highly controlled test environment?
Right.
The first limitation, Holmgren points out, is that this relies on a single benchmark. The data set was strictly human, non-PATA promoters. So we simply don't know if this 10-second marvel would generalize to other promoter definitions.
Or to other species, like yeast or mice.
Exactly. Or to data sets generated by different lab sequencing techniques.
Right. A keyhole cut for human biology might not fit the doors in a fruit fly.
Exactly. And another critical limitation they note involves the negative data set, the background DNA. Those sequences might carry what are called compositional biases.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, the risk here is that the AI might not be learning the intricate, precise logic of a binding motif at all. It might just be noticing a broader trend, like maybe promoters generally have a much higher percentage of G's and C's than random chunks of background DNA. So if the negative sequences don't have similar GC content, the AI might just be measuring the overall weight of the letters rather than reading the specific words.
So I get it. It would be like training an AI to identify pictures of boats. And the AI achieves 99% accuracy, not because it recognizes the shape of a sail or, you know, the curve of a hull, but just because it notices there is a massive amount of blue water in the background of the boat pictures.
Yes. It gets the right answer for the wrong reason.
Okay, that makes sense.
But there is a third limitation, and biologically, it is the most glaring omission in the architecture. DNA is not a flat, single-sided ribbon. It is a double helix. It's double-stranded.
Right.
Yet promoter CNN, as it is currently built, only looks at one strand.
It's literally reading with one eye closed.
Basically, yeah. Biology operates in three dimensions across both strands simultaneously. So if the model lacks strand symmetry, it is blind to half the physical reality of the molecule.
That is a pretty significant oversight. But the report maps out how to address these blind spots, right?
It does. To fix the double-stranded problem, future work could use reverse complement augmentation. You essentially force the model to train on the sequence from both directions. Or, even better, you build a strand-equivariant architecture that mathematically understands both sides of the DNA from the ground up.
And what about validating those sequence logos? Because right now, they look like SP1 binding sites to our human eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't there a way to mathematically prove it?
Oh, absolutely. Currently, those motifs, while visually obvious, haven't been formally matched to a database yet. The next step would be to take those learned matrices and align them against a massive, rigorously verified biological database like Jaspar.
Using specific tools?
Yeah, using alignment tools like TomTom. That way, you can assign true biological identities to the AI's findings with absolute statistical confidence. It would also be incredibly revealing to compare this tiny CNN against the giant DNA language models that have emerged recently, like DNRT2.
Oh, that's the ultimate David and Goliath scenario?
You're right.
A tiny model that trains in 10 seconds on a consumer gaming PC, going up against massive architectures trained on supercomputer clusters. Like, does the massive scale actually provide a deeper understanding, or is a small, brilliantly biased CNN all you really need?
It's a great question for future research.
So what does this all mean? Why should you, the listener, care? Well, if you step back and look at the incredible journey we just went on, we started with the raw code of human life. We translated those A, C, G, and T's into a simple grid of ones and zeros. We slid 128 mathematical keyholes down that grid for 10 seconds, and we watched a machine not just successfully sort the data, but independently rediscover the precise biological keys that initiate human gene transcription.
It really shows that AI doesn't have to be an unexplainable black box. We aren't required to trust a machine's predictions blindly. By looking at the first layer filters, we can extract human-readable, verifiable knowledge directly from the machine's brain.
It's like we taught the machine to read an ancient text. And instead of just translating it for us, the machine turned around and handed us the dictionary it wrote for itself.
That's exactly what it did.
Which leaves me with a provocative thought I haven't been able to shake since diving into the source material. If a tiny model, training in mere seconds on hardware you can buy at a local electronics store, can independently rediscover the hidden, fundamental language of human DNA, what other fundamental laws of nature are the massive supercomputer-sized AI models quietly uncovering right now that we haven't even realized they know yet? They are just staring at the data, learning the grammar of the universe, waiting for us to ask the right questions,